Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Looking for a new home should be exciting, not frustrating. That's why Homes.com might just be the best home shopping site out there. Imagine searching for your dream home without ads cluttering your view. Homes.com's sleek, beautifully designed, ad-free interface makes your search simple and distraction-free. And if you're a parent, you know how important school information is. Homes.com gets it. They're the only site with detailed school and district info from multiple sources, including reviews from Niche. Plus, they've got a super comprehensive and transparent agent directory, making it easy to find the right expert to guide your journey. Oh, and here's a game changer. Homes.com always connects you directly with a listing agent who knows the home best. They even go beyond the basics, offering the most in-depth neighborhood content of any home shopping site, packed with details to help you find a community that feels like home. And the search tools? Unmatched. With 22 data visualization layers, 7 environmental layers, and filters for commute times and architectural styles, Homes.com truly is the home search you've been searching for. Go to Homes.com. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
For Ben, as I stated over and over again, it was alignment and a recognition of the organization that previous dysfunction was going to walk out the door. And so the questions I asked were, you know, very direct in the sense that, you know, are you married to this roster? If it doesn't fit Ben's vision, are you willing to move on from certain guys, whether, no matter how much you like or dislike them? You know, do you have your house in order? What have you learned from the last 3 years? Things like that. And I got very honest, transparent answers to the point where I was extremely comfortable that there was recognition and a willingness to, I guess, move into the 2025 world and start building a champion.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. Always good when you get a guy like Rick Smith telling you the truth about what happened and the questions he asked and the answers he received. Pretty interesting.
It's extraordinary, really, to be involved in the post-interview dissection of the interview process.
Yes.
Seldom do we get that kind of access to this kind of information, which is, makes it interesting. I don't sense, with an agent, you always wonder about the agenda, right? I mean, maybe
they have an agenda.
You're trained to, yes, to always wonder that. I don't sense, and as freely as he offered the information, there's any sort of agenda, except for the fact that maybe he did want to see, he did seem intent on making sure everybody understood that the process was something that he felt was unusually good.
Yes.
And stood out for that. And maybe he believed that the Bears were getting unfairly criticized because of that. Whatever the case is, we're fortunate to have access to what he had to say. The bottom line, the biggest takeaway is that we always wonder about the head coach and the general manager's relationship and how that power struggle ensues. And I don't even think it's struggle is the right word in this case. They're just getting started. But it's good to know that our perception of the situation, Ben Johnson coming in, Ryan Poles maybe being diminished, is the way that he described it. Not in those terms,
yeah,
but in terms we all understand.
Yeah, I remember years ago having a conversation with a colleague of mine about what are you doing quoting the agent, right? The agent is the players,
you know. I have a funny story about, but yeah,
yeah.
I know what you're saying.
It's just not like a credible. It's not like a an NFL observer, even, you know, oftentimes, David, as you well know, when you're talking to people, you know, there is an enemy within and an enemy outside. And each team, when you get some people criticizing a team for something, they may be causing trouble. They may be trying to tell you a rumor they heard, or you got to be careful about how you cover this stuff. But the agents are, I mean, they are financially benefiting from whether the player gets credit or gets
they're
the
biased.
They're completely biased, and they're not.
So they will have an agenda.
Yes, I would be
typically
aware
of
that.
You know how it works from years of covering it, and it still kind of works this way differently, but it's always the same in that. Agents behind the scenes, unofficially, off the record, will give you background. They always are trying to represent their client in the best possible way and wonder how things go. So reporters who cover teams have constant dialogue with agents of the players they cover. First year I was on the beat, this is going back 21 years, and I had not covered a pro beat before. So there was a lot of, I was naive to a lot of the way things worked. And Lee Steinberg was Cordell Stewart's agent.
Great.
And you remember that was the year of Cordell Stewart, the experiment.
Wow.
And Lee Steinberg was one of those guys. I was covering the Bears for the Tribune. He clearly got in touch with me. He might have sensed that I was younger and naive. And he gave me all that he thought about the way Cordell Stewart was interacting with his receivers and something about sight adjustments and this and that. And, you know, I quoted him.
Uh-huh.
I quoted him because I didn't realize at the time that was the way it worked. And you just got background information and these agents work people all the time.
Sure.
He was working me.
Yes.
Just like he was probably working you or why he was working everybody who was on that beat. And I quoted him because I felt like, well, I'm going to get the most complete information here. And it was in the next day, he was like, what are you doing? What are you doing? Do you realize what I told you was between us? Well, but Lee, and he was a total pro, and he is a total pro.
Oh, yeah.
He's one of the best in the business, and he's a legend in the business.
Yes, he is.
But I do think it stood out to me as, like, I remember that exchange, and I remember learning a lesson that these are the guys that really, I don't want to say run the league, but they certainly control a lot of the information that gets out there and how it's presented.
Yeah, I mean, it's so funny. I remember when I was a newbie on the Bulls beat talking to David Falk. And David Falk,
Michael
Jordan's agent, his representative. And David Falk, we finish our conversation. He says, now remember, I am Michael's attorney. I am not his agent. So if you refer to me, you refer to me as his attorney. And I was like, yeah, okay, very good. And I don't even think I used anything. But then in like a notes column, I added a note where I said, Michael's attorney, comma, agent David Falk. Just because that's how I am. You know, I had like a little chuckle in my, well, he called me
on it. Of course.
And he was not happy about it. And I was like, well, I was just trying to clarify for the reader. I just played.
Well, I think in those days, and maybe it's changed a lot because of how much
coverage there is. There's a lot more power for the agents.
And there's a lot more out there in terms of just avenues to express your point of view. But they used to watch that pretty closely, and they used to care about the details and how they were portrayed and how they were described. And I think that, you know, the one thing that I think that was one of the bigger lessons in coming to a market like this was just covering pro sports after covering college for so long, just how much agents were involved in shaping news cycles and shaping the narratives of stories. And we're seeing it in the NBA as well, because of the way that this goes on before the trade deadline. You can't imagine what's going on behind the scenes.
Oh, my God. I mean, the agents are the guys making all the deals, for God's sake.
And the agents in the head coaching cycles, the process of what gets out there and how it's presented. So it's very interesting to hear Rick Smith. It was refreshing candor because it was a peek behind the curtain, and he did it in a way that didn't sound like he had an agenda.
Right.
He may or may not, but he certainly shared a lot of information that was valuable.
He did share a lot of information, and among it was what we just listened to, how the coach will have the ability to go to the general manager and say, hey, I need this and this, and I don't like this, and you understand we can't use that at all. And along those lines, we were talking to Dan Wiederer earlier and asked him what you know, when you look at the Bears and that offensive line, that clearly is an area that everybody knows they need to improve. But what more do they need to improve? And he answered the question talking about how much Ben Johnson as a coach likes to have the run game, likes to have the play action as a way of helping a young quarterback, which I totally agree with philosophically. And I was curious as to why the Bears didn't do that more. Shane Waldron barely did it, and they improved it a bit when he was let go. But I wonder, David, and that's kind of my question is, you know, would you rather have a great offensive line and an average running back, or an average running back, or a great running back and an average offensive line?
It's a really good question because it's the Saquon Barkley conundrum.
That's
or
what
the Derrick Henry conundrum.
Yes.
And you wonder, as much as we want to lean into this idea that those two guys have brought the running back position back and restored its value around the league, I don't think that's necessarily the case, and I think it almost would be overstating it. If you polled 100 football people, my sense would be that 75% of them would answer, give me the offensive line,
yes,
and the average running back,
yes,
maybe even higher than that, because I do think that when you talk about what's harder to find, now Saquon Barkley is literally a generational talent. Derrick Henry, the same way.
See, that to me is the difference.
Well, but
because, David, it's like if you had Walter Payton, did he have a great offensive line? He had unbelievable numbers and ability.
Not
did
always.
Barry Sanders play with the greatest off? But my God, the guy was a video game. Now, again, that's like a one in a billion
player. But you're talking about a bunch of people, you know, the subset, because they're not really risk takers.
Yes.
If you're gambling on a guy being one of those guys, who we mentioned are Hall of Famers.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. I think Saquon might be a Hall of Famer.
Yes.
I think he's headed that
way.
And I think he's that good a player. And he's one of the few players that, even when he was first coming out, that I saw Peyton-esque quality too. Nothing like him, but just the acceleration, the ability. See, he can do things that are extraordinary.
That's a fair comp, and that's not exaggeration either.
But I'm being honest about how I thought about him when he first is, before his knee injury or anything else. I'm saying that if you get a guy like that, he'll make the offensive line look better than it is. But you would much prefer to have the great offensive line, because running backs, why are they not of value? Because they get hit so much, they get hurt so much, you need more than one. Walter was a guy where you don't have to draft a running back for 20 years when you get a guy like that. It's a totally different situation.
You look at the difference in approaches. Now, the Eagles, they added Saquon Barkley to a team that already had a dominant offensive line.
And wow, is that weird.
But they still got to the Super Bowl a couple years ago when their running back wasn't Saquon Barkley,
yes,
and the running game was still respectable. You look at the San Francisco 49ers, they have a situation where I think Christian McCaffrey, when healthy, is an MVP candidate each and every year. But even without him, the running game functions at a high level because of the scheme and the talent and the offensive line strength. So there are all kinds of examples in Baltimore, even Kansas City. So I think you look at those kind of examples as being the rule rather than the exception.
Yes,
and most
I
people
agree.
Are going to follow that rule. And they would be wise to do that here in Chicago as well. I think if they're debating whether or not, well, you're picking 10th and you have a guy that, let's say hypothetically, we talked about Ashton Jeanty, and he's there. I don't know if that would be the wisest choice if there's an offensive tackle that is a plug-and-play guy as well. Now, that is debatable, and we will give Ben Johnson, I think, the benefit of the doubt in this first draft because of what happened in Detroit with Jahmyr Gibbs. But I don't think that's the direction you want to really go. You don't fall in love with skill. You still want to build from the ball on out.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, but I do think that they need an upgrade at both. And I know you like Swift a lot more than I do, but I think they need an upgrade on the offensive line and at the running back.
Well, I do think, but I don't think necessarily. Look, DeAndre Swift had a career high in carries this year. I don't think that's such a great thing.
No, that's not.
And he shouldn't have that next year either.
No.
But what I look at the Bears' offensive backfield, number one, I think DeAndre Swift has a contract that probably behooves them to bring him back and find a role.
Oh, yeah.
Now, he could be your second back. He could be your space back, your third down option. But I think they need an upgrade at the other spot. I think Roschon Johnson is not durable enough to trust to be a 200-carry guy or a guy that's going to run downhill for you all the time, because is he going to be there next week if he runs downhill too often this week?
He's never been that. Never been that way. In college he wasn't, and he's certainly not that in the NFL. And it's not his fault.
He's
behind a great player.
Yeah, but look, injuries happen to players. We get that.
Yeah.
Look at free agency for the Bears. There's some veterans out there that are also injury-prone. Look at the draft. Get a downhill runner. Pair him with DeAndre Swift and give you that 1-2 combination. We don't know what Ben Johnson thinks about DeAndre Swift because he's already coached him.
Yes.
And he coached him one season, and DeAndre Swift was deemed expendable in Detroit. Do those opinions linger as well?
Is he Sonic or is he Knuckles or is he neither?
I don't think the Bears' backfield is good enough to have a nickname yet.
Okay.
I don't think we're at the nickname phase.
They don't have a running back good enough.
They don't have a running back to be nicknamed. I don't know. Does Caleb Williams have a nickname?
No, he doesn't need one.
Same. Same approach. It is interesting, but the bottom line is
special.
Go for the offensive line. Build that up, and you'll be amazed at how good your running backs look.
I agree.
Regardless of their draft status or salary range. That is how you get a good running game.
And you get some play action going, and now you got a good passing game too.
So I wanted to mention this, speaking of football.
Yes.
This is worth your time to go on the internet and go on X. Brett Bielema, our friend from the University of Illinois, ILL.
X is Twitter.
I-N-I. Okay, X.
Whatever. X is Twitter.
He has some fun on that app, and he is having fun.
He has fun in life.
Yes.
That was hilarious in the game.
The South Carolina taunting issue with Shane Beamer, that was hilarious. And now he's trolling Jim Harbaugh. Jim Harbaugh, there is a tweet that he has a San Francisco 49ers hat on, and it says, if you cheat to win, then you already lost, and it's a quote attributed to Jim Harbaugh. And Brett Bielema quote tweets that and says, really? Why did you leave? Was looking forward to playing, but understand why you ran to the NFL. See you in the future and can't wait. Hashtag fam ILLY.
Well, and the background to that is Michigan is still dealing with the NCAA is still looking into or still talking about punishing the program for the sign-stealing scandal the year they won the national championship.
Which Jim Harbaugh was part of, and he was a coach of.
So it's like Brett's just kind of at home. It's the off-season, and he's having some fun.
He's recruiting. They're getting recruits and commitments. They're doing all the things, but he's having all the fun.
But this is an old tweet from
Jim. It's an old quote from the San Francisco 49ers. Now he updates it in a later tweet last night. He has another picture of Harbaugh at a press conference being quoted saying, tell the truth always. If you lie, it's over. Jim Harbaugh attributed with the quote, to which Brett Bielema tweets, laughing emoji, football, laughing emoji. So he's having fun at Harbaugh's expense, tweaking all the way. And then he's trying
to engage the guy.
He's trying to engage. This is a guy that has fun. Doesn't shy away from a battle.
I know you love looking at football tweets. Did you happen to see LeBron James tweeting, Xing, whatever, to Ryan Day? He sends a thing to Ryan Day wondering if he has any. He says basically that he knows he probably doesn't have any eligibility in basketball, but what about other sports? LeBron famously went from high school to the NBA, and Day texts back that LeBron's a great supporter of Ohio State, but you would have to start in the back of the room. You'd be with the freshmen. You'd have to work your way up. That's the response. And then LeBron says, no problem, Coach Day, earned, not given, which is a nice T-shirt, David.
That would be a good T-shirt. One. You like your T-shirts. I thought that was amusing. I also wondered, as they had their fun exchanging tweets, whether or not LeBron felt that good about Ryan Day the day after the Michigan loss. Was he one of those guys who came at Ryan Day?
Fire this.
I wondered that. Beep. You know, or was he loyally by his side?
Maybe I'm being cruel here, but I was wondering if he was kind of speaking on behalf of Bronny, who might want to go back to college since things in the NBA are getting difficult.
Yeah, they're getting a little harder there. I think that he was called out by a few people. He didn't have a good game the other night, apparently. Yeah, you see all kinds of reports. I don't know how much he's playing.
He was 0-for in a game where they felt they needed – it was weird
because
they
rough,
said
man.
They needed his energy.
NBA's rough.
That's what his coach said, that they thought they needed his energy. David.
He's still a young man.
Have you watched him play? He doesn't really have energy. he has entitlement.
Wow.
See, now I'm in trouble.
It's tough for rookies. Ask Montrezl Bazelis.
Yeah.
It's a tough league.
It is a tough league, especially when you don't belong in it.
Or we can talk to Casey Johnson about
that.
He's
done well in the G League, though. I don't know if that matters. All right. We've got, and I don't think he's done that well. We got Casey next. We can talk to him. The trade deadline a week from tomorrow. Casey's going to walk us through all the various scenarios. No, I don't think he knows exactly what's going to happen, but we got to ask him about what does AK need to have happen? That's one of the issues that the Bulls face. Casey Johnson joins us next, Mullion Hall on the Score.
So it's a new year, 2025, and you're thinking, how am I going to make this year different? How am I going to build something for myself? But where do I start? Shopify is how you're going to make it happen, and here's how. Shopify makes it simple to create your brand, open for business, and get your first sale. The best time to start your new business is right now. Get your store up and running easily with thousands of customizable templates, no coding or design skills required. All you need to do is drag and drop. Their powerful social media tools let you connect all your channels and create shoppable posts and help you sell everywhere people scroll. What happens if you don't act now? Will you regret it? What if someone beats you to the idea? Don't kick yourself when you hear this again in a year because you didn't do anything now. With Shopify, your first sale is closer than you think. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to start selling with Shopify today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Hey guys, it's Jim Costa from Cash the Ticket. If you're betting the NFL playoffs, you need to be listening to Cash the Ticket. We're breaking down every single game, totals, and sides, all the way to the big game. Subscribe to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
And now, KC Johnson.
Kobe White, pull up three over Karis LeVert and nails it.
Chicago Bulls insider from Chicago Sports Network.
I've covered the NBA for a long time.
KC Johnson with Mullion Haugh.
Bulls.
On 670 The Score.
Mullion Haugh, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Always a delight to talk to our friend KC Johnson, and he joins us now on The Score Hotline, brought to you by Aturo, your all-weather tire, aturo.com. KC, how are you, buddy?
Hey, what's going on, guys? How you doing?
We're living the dream. have you seen that Bob Dylan movie yet, The Complete Unknown?
I have not. I'm not a big movie goer, but
I just think you'd like it. You're a singer-songwriter. Yeah. It would be perfect
what
for
you. What have you been doing anyway?
Well, Dylan's probably one of my be-all, end-alls, but yes. I will say that, and most Dylanologists I thought would frown upon it, but most Dylanologists, friends of mine, have told me I have to see it. So yes. I'll see it eventually.
You must see it.
But now you're on the road covering the Bulls. And tonight, big one against the Celtics. Yeah, the grid. Definitely. Well played. Well played, KC. How big is this next week for Arturis Karnašovas?
I mean, it's huge because, you know, he has said publicly multiple times that they're not done making changes. He's trying to make change. He wants to make change. And this is a difficult landscape in which to make change. But this is when things get serious and opportunities that may not be present currently present themselves. And I personally see a management team ready to act. So we'll see if they can find the right match. And yeah, I mean, it's clearly a lot of pressure on him to make some changes, because they're currently stuck in the middle where they have been for a long time.
I got to tell you, I don't know how to feel about the amount of pressure on AK to get something done, because in the past we've seen that he did not feel any pressure to get anything done, and he didn't want to get pressured into an Alex Caruso trade at the trade deadline or whomever it might be. Now you keep hearing these rumors about whether Vooch could wind up somehow in Golden State if Zach is somehow going to wind up in Milwaukee. That seems insane to me. But will there be something drastic that happens here? Has his thinking changed in terms of what he's willing to kind of do to get anything done?
Yeah, that's the part that is unknown. I mean, like, currently what you hear from the teams that I talk to around the league is asking prices high. And, yeah, you know, that's not a bad stance to have at this stage. But as you get closer, does he drop that price just to make a deal? I mean, I would say the critical difference to point out between this trade deadline and previous ones, from my view anyway, is that in previous deadlines, they didn't make a move because he wasn't sure he wanted to. If they don't make a move this year, it's because they just couldn't find a deal. And I'm not making excuses for the management team or the Bulls. What I will say is that, particularly of contracts, and certainly in the case of LaVine and a little bit in the case of Vucevic, in this day and age with, you know, boring CBA minutiae, aprons, first apron, second apron, it is harder to make trades. That's just the simple fact. Now, yes, Brooklyn has got out in front of this and traded Dennis Schroeder and Dorian Finney-Smith. Now, those contracts were smaller, and in Schroeder's case, was an expiring. So, again, that's the critical difference to me. He wants to make change. He wants to make trades. Will they find a partner? I don't know the answer to that.
Let's just remind people, maybe hit a reset here, because whiteboard it for us, Casey, because what's the purpose that they for trading at this point? Is it because they want to finish the season as poorly as possible so they can protect that number 10 pick? Or can they accomplish perhaps doing both, because they can be among the 10 worst teams and be in that sort of murky middle? Restate the purpose for why they would want to unload at this point.
Well, I mean, you know, they have said publicly the opposite at Media Day, that the draft pick is not guiding them. I would posit to say that's not fully accurate. I mean, look, if you're in a rebuild situation or retool situation or whatever you want to classify this, you've started to change the makeup of this team with the trade of DeMar DeRozan and Alex Caruso. So this is, by all accounts, a strong draft. If you are retooling and adding young players and trying to develop young players, you need to keep that draft pick. So they're not going to make a bad trade just to get bad, but the whole purpose is to try to, you know, if you make a trade that helps you, your chances to keep that top 10 pick, that's the goal. And, you know, I mean, Vooch and LaVine are playing at all-star level, but where is this franchise going with them playing at all-star level, right? So that's the question that management is asking itself. That's the calculus they're using with which to approach this trade deadline. And, you know, that's why the entire league is, you know, the Bulls are one of the main teams that the league is focused on. Detroit's another one because they've got cap space. Toronto's another one because they can be a conduit for trades. Brooklyn was before they made the two deals, but the Bulls are in the focal point, as is Miami, obviously, with the Jimmy Butler situation.
I'm curious about the Jimmy Butler situation. What I mean, there's a certain level of insanity to it, isn't there? I mean, Jimmy's had an amazing career, but it seems like everywhere he's been, he leaves under bad circumstance, right? It's just it's been repeatedly like Jimmy heading out of town, and I don't know how many more of these he's got left, but he clearly wants out.
Yeah, and I mean, it's, you know, a movable, stubborn force in Pat Riley versus a movable, stubborn force in Jimmy Butler. That's right. Basically what's playing out. Look, Miami got two NBA Finals runs and appearances out of Jimmy Butler. He's played at an incredibly high level, but it's broken. And yes, he has a shelf life. We saw that play out here to some extent, although he did not want to leave here. That's the critical difference between Chicago and Miami. But this followed Jimmy around, and you know, he's probably going to get his way because this has become an untenable situation. Now, will he get his way to get a trade to Phoenix? That's where things get dicey and tricky, because obviously Bradley Beal holds all the power in that equation. But I can't see Miami doing this song and dance suspension for the rest of the season. So I expect Jimmy Butler to be moved by next Thursday.
Patrick Williams responded to getting benched with one of his best games of the season the other night without Zach and Kobe White tonight. Will he continue to come off the bench, and do you think that is his best role moving forward?
The latter is an emphatic yes, and I think that Billy would have been preferred to – and he still may come off the bench tonight. I'm about to head over to shoot around here in Boston shortly. What I would say is, with Zach away from the team for personal reasons and Kobe's status still uncertain, he may have to be inserted in the starting lineup, particularly with who Boston starts at the other end. They've got some pretty good wings in Tatum and Brown. So maybe it's a one-game thing where he goes back into the starting lineup. But I think Billy and this coaching staff hit on something. And quite frankly, I think Patrick hit on something, because every time he goes to the bench, what he talks to us about is how he feels like freer there and sees more opportunity there. And so he looked like a completely different player to me. And what I loved about it even more, and I reported this in my pre-tip hit on our network. I was told, you know, cause we found out the starting lineups after we talked to Billy pregame. And I was told when we found out that he got moved to the bench, that Billy was not above using him to close, and that's exactly what he did. So right. I love that. You know, he didn't start. He played aggressively, and then he closed. And he was one of the key critical pieces of that victory. So good for Patrick. And yeah, maybe they've hit on something here. And but tonight I would expect him probably in the starting lineup tonight against Boston.
What's your take on the idea that Bradley Beal rejected any kind of trade to the Bulls? Is that him not wanting to play in the cold, as he said? Is that him wanting to win without having to do anything? I mean, that's got to be the worst contract in the league right now, because they're desperate to get rid of him, but he holds all the cards.
Yeah, well, multiple things. I mean, the first thing to emphasize is there's no guarantee the Bulls would make that trade, even if Bradley Beal did waive his no trade clause mm-hmm. to come to the Bulls. I think people are assuming that that's a done deal if Bradley Beal waives his no trade clause. I think it's still an internal decision to make, and would certainly have to be sweetened with extensive draft capital. So that's a pretty complicated deal, because I think multiple teams would get involved. But let's posit, you know, that Bradley Beal does say, yeah, I'll waive my no trade clause, and there's enough draft capital in there to give the Bulls, you know, consideration there. What I would say is, you know, I mean, Bradley Beal has a no trade clause for a reason. He has that power, and he does have obviously a relation with Billy Donovan, and things that are said now, you know, can change in a week. I mean, the Miami Heat put out a statement saying we are not trading Jimmy Butler. You know, 10 days later, they put out a statement, we are trading Jimmy Butler. I mean, this is just, that's how the league works. It's fluid. So I don't put much stock into what he's saying now. If he releases a statement, you know, at noon on next Thursday saying I'm not waiving my no trade clause, then it's different, you know. But there's a lot of time between now and next Thursday.
Just so we understand it correctly, besides Matas Buzelis, everybody else on the Bulls roster is a possibility to be traded? Will teams ask about everybody but Matas?
I mean, I wouldn't even put Matas untouchable. I mean, we're putting Matas Buzelis untouchable?
No,
I mean,
I'm just wondering.
The only untouchable I've ever covered is Michael Jordan.
Okay, I mean, Jerry. Like, All right.
No, I mean, I'm just saying, like, I mean, like, if the right deal comes along and Mattis has to be a piece in it, I mean, you're crazy not to consider that. So, no, there are no untouchables on this roster. What I would say is, yes, it's not just Vooch and Zach and Lonzo extensive. This is more boring CBA minutia, but the Bulls are in a little bit of a pickle with Kobe White and Ayo Dosunmu because they were heralded for signing them to bargain deals, and as they should be. But a new stipulation in the CBA limits you to extending them at 140% of that number. They both outplayed those contracts well for beyond 140%. Do you proactively get out in front of that and trade one of those guys before they hit restricted free agency next summer? I mean, these, again, are the questions you have to think in long-term situations at the front office. So, yes, everybody's in play for the Bulls, and they are considering everything.
Real quickly.
That sounds like management speak. We are considering everything.
No, I understand what you're saying. Real quickly, though, what would be the market for Josh Giddey?
Oh, God.
Nothing, especially because he's a restricted
agent. Curious because,
there's not a chance. I'm guessing you could get more for Alex Caruso if you could get him back. Oh, boy. There you go. That's editorial commenting. Casey, thank you, buddy. Great stuff.
All right, gentlemen. Thanks, man.
Keep up the good work.
Enjoy Boston. See you, buddy. That is Casey Johnson. I want him to see that movie. I picture him sitting around playing his guitar.
Oh, he'll love that movie. You just ask about everybody because you just don't know asking about anybody.
I love that answer about Bozelis. Why would he be the guy that is? I mean, I agree with him. I mean, I'm not looking to move him, but I just saying, who on their team would you not want to trade? You trade anybody.
Nobody.
All right, we got Chris Chelios next. We got to talk to him about the weirdest angle he ever took on a goal he scored, because that was absolutely unbelievable last night with the Blackhawks winning down in Tampa thanks to Connor Bedard's he got him going anyway. He got him tied in the game, and then they took off. Mully and Haw on the Score.
Chris Chelios. Up the boards to Chelios with room. He shoots. Score! BetMGM ambassador. The sportsbook born in Vegas.
Nice play by Chris Chelios.
Hockey Hall of Famer.
Chris Chelios is not human. I'm convinced of it. Not only will he go in the Hall of Fame, I think he should go in the Smithsonian.
Blackhawks legend.
Chelios will add defense, but he'll also add offense to the Hawks.
Steve Smith ahead to Murphy. Nichols at the line. Chelios moving in.
Three-time Stanley Cup champion.
What a competitor Chris Chelios has been over the years, and he's been a winner every place he's ever been.
Chris Chelios with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Joining us now is BetMGM ambassador Chris Chelios. BetMGM, the sportsbook born in Vegas. Chris joins us on the Aturo Hotline. Aturo, you're all-weather Tire, Aturo.com. Chris, good morning. How are you?
I'm good. Finally get to have one of these interviews after a win. A good win in Tampa.
Doesn't happen often, but it happened last night.
How about the angle on that goal, Chris? I mean, the Blackhawks are down a goal in the first period. We know that's kind of their MO. But then you get back in the game with Connor Bedard hitting that shot, which I mean, it was, you know, he was aiming, he saw something, but that was extraordinary to put that puck where he put it from the angle he put it there. Have you ever scored a goal like that? Have you ever even tried?
Not a chance, and that's exactly right. I would never even try shooting unless I had a shot like Connor. But and he beat Vasilevskiy, and I don't think, you know, Vasilevskiy wasn't really cheating. There's just enough room for that puck to slide between the post and his head. And I think, you know, they always say sometimes it takes something bad to happen for you to, you know, correct things. And, you know, they talked about not shooting the puck, you know, the game before. I think they had four shots, you know, in the first period. And that was the emphasis last night. And everybody's shooting pucks. It was great to see Slaggart, you know, score his first goal of his career. But, yeah, again, back to Bedard, you know, you lead by example, and if he shoots pucks like that from angles like that, then, you know, it dictates what the rest of the guys are going to do, and it worked. They took a lot of shots. You never know what's going to go in. And Slaggart's goal, you know, obviously Vasilevskiy would like to have that one back, but still, if you don't shoot, like Wayne Gretzky said, you know, 100% of the shots you never take never go in, right? So I hope that's the mindset now. Just start shooting and driving the net and be harder to play against.
Charlie, what'd you make of the trade of Taylor Hall to the Hurricanes and the complications that it seemed? It's very complex because now they're retaining a salary slot and they get a third-round draft pick back that they wanted to guarantee. It's their own third-round draft pick. Maybe an offer sheet is in the offing. Who knows? How did you interpret that deal?
Complicated is the perfect word. I don't know. And I'm not a cap guy, a salary cap guy, there's loopholes for everything. And even when there's not, they find loopholes. So, yeah, it doesn't sound, you know, great. But, again, if Hall wasn't happy and the Hawks weren't happy with him, sometimes, you know, you've got to eat some of that money to free up a position for another guy. And you only get so many roster spots. So I think it was just a move to make room for, like you said, Kid Slaggart gets called up and other young kids. And we talk about all these draft picks coming up. It gives them an opportunity to get in the lineup and get some experience. So I'm just guessing it was all about a roster spot.
So you're going to the Super Bowl? Did I hear that correctly, Chris? You're planning on going to New Orleans for the first time?
I am. I've never been to New Orleans. I got a heck of a week coming up from starting from Saskatoon, Saskatchewan. I got a hockey camp there, and then Utah, and then right to the Super Bowl. And looking forward to it.
Wow, yeah. My God, that's a diverse trip.
There's no way that is direct. You know, that like you're circumnavigating the Earth.
No, I got a friend, thank God, Reed Simpson, my ex-teammate. He's doing all my flights and helping me and babysitting me. But he's not. I'm actually ending it up with Russia. I'm going to go to Russia and see my son Jake play the day after we get back for the Super Bowl. So it's going to be a heck of a 2 weeks here with that, you know, the four season, or when I say the Four Nations All-Star break. Unfortunately, I'll miss that, but I'm sure I'll get to see it on TV. That'll be real exciting.
So, Chelly, how does a man about town like you never step foot in New Orleans or Bourbon Street until now?
You know what? That's a good one. I wasn't around, you know, when the Bears won the Super Bowl. I would have for sure went then, but I was in Montreal then, and I couldn't get away because of hockey. But, yeah, it's just one of those places. I've been on a port there on a ship, you know, just docked there, but never, you know, got off the boat there. So, yeah, I've heard all kinds of cool things about it. And it's not the cleanest town, I guess they say, but there's plenty to eat.
There's some phenomenal restaurants. You'll have some of the greatest meals of your life. Beware the Hurricanes, though. I would say be very careful about some of the Bourbon Street boozing.
Oh, geez. Well, I've survived everything else, so we'll see. I can do okay. Yeah.
Do you have an early favorite in the game?
I mean, I can't. How do you go against KC? I mean, it's going to be a great game. Eagles look tougher than, you know, they made their point in that last game that they got to the Super Bowl. So it's going to be a great game, just like the Buffalo KC. I just hope the referees don't dictate, you know, we're not talking about the referees after the game.
Where is your son in Russia? And have you been there before?
I've been in Russia, not to watch him play, but he's just outside Moscow. Yeah, 20 minutes away from Moscow. But it really is. I've been there a few times. It's a beautiful, you know, right in Moscow and the Red Square. And, you know, the food's great, the accommodations. And we've skated, you know, obviously I've talked about skating with Putin and that group of guys back in the day with the Russian Five guys. So, it's good when you know someone there, obviously, and they can get you around because the language is a problem. But, you know, my son's been there with, like, I think they got 18 North Americans on the team. So it's pretty easy for those guys to get around.
Have a great trip.
Yeah, great stuff, Chris.
We look forward to talking to you next week.
I look forward to talking to you after half of this debacle.
Thanks, Chris.
You're the best. Right. Thanks, Chris.
You bet, guys. Bye-bye.
That is Chris Chelios. Wow, man. Come on.
Imagine what that passport looks like.
Holy cow. I mean, been all over the world. He's never been to New Orleans. That's, you know, it makes sense because there's not a lot of hockey in New Orleans, right?
No, there's not a lot of hockey in New Orleans.
That's too bad. It's a good spot to go, though, for a guy that hasn't been there. I believe, David, there's a World War II museum down there.
I'm sure that draws a lot of people to New Orleans. Yeah, exactly.
Mully and Haw, we got Stacey Dales next on The Score.